At the top of our program, a deal to renew federal benefits for the country's long-term unemployed continues to elude the U.S. Congress, but supporters of the effort, which include Democrats and a growing number of Republicans, are hopeful of a breakthrough in the Senate as early as this week. There, senators are looking at two proposals, one from each party. Since the benefits expired back in December, several Senate votes have failed to generate enough support among Republicans to pass. Disagreements have centered on the length of an extension and how to pay for it. Long-term jobless benefits apply to persons who have been out of work 27 weeks or more. Federal data released last Friday show that while the ranks of Americans out of work for less than 5 weeks has actually fallen, the number of long-term jobless increased by about 200,000 just last month. For his take on the debate over extending unemployment insurance, we welcome back from the U.S. House Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint Township. Hi, Dan. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's good to be on.
Before we explore what's going on in the Senate, which is very interesting, clarify for us where a long-term unemployment extension stands in your chamber in the House.
Well, we have, you know, strong support among the Democrats, and I think increasing support among, I guess, what you'd call rank-and-file Republicans, not the House leadership, but those that, you know, that are just thinking about their home district and what they're dealing with. The difficulty here in the House is that it seems as though Speaker Boehner is unwilling to act until the Senate takes a position, and then that will trigger House action, which honestly is very frustrating because that's never been the history of the Congress, that the House sits around waiting for the Senate to act. The norm actually has been the other way around, but in the case of Speaker Boehner, he prefers to wait for the Senate to act. And, of course, that's something that we're all keeping a close eye on.
Well, I want to pursue that just for a second because the mood of the House appears to have changed significantly in recent months, mainly after the Ryan Murray budget compromise last December and after Speaker Boehner's repudiation of the Tea Party. Did the mood in the room change as significantly as we've been led to believe, and is that mood still in the room 3 months or so later?
Well, unfortunately, I think it depends on the issue. When it came to the debt ceiling increase, for example, clearly the Speaker was willing to say to the Tea Party, step aside, we're going to move on this. Of course, he was only able to deliver 28 votes even for the debt ceiling increase. The Democrats carried that vote, all but two of our members and only 28 of his. So the mood, unfortunately, is still one that's quite partisan. The difficulty is that with the Ryan Murray budget agreement, which I voted for, we hoped and many of us pushed to put the unemployment extension into that package. Because they were unwilling to do that, there was a commitment to take unemployment up in January. Well, January's passed, February's passed, and here we are almost halfway through March. And I think for some who ideologically oppose this, I think they're just trying to run out the clock. And, you know, to me, the problem with that is this is not like some abstract concept. There are 2 million Americans who have lost their benefits, that can't pay their car bill, that can't pay their rent or their mortgage, that are struggling to keep the heat on and put groceries on the table. That's the human cost for the inaction of Congress. So this is not some abstraction.
How are the long-term unemployed faring in your district?
Well, it's tough. I mean, we've had our district in particular, you know, this focus on long-term unemployment is even greater. Older communities that are having a more difficult time making the transition out of manufacturing into some, you know, the next economy, particularly have long-term unemployment. And that's what we're seeing. As you said, short-term unemployment may be going down, but the long-term problem, that's where the real difficulty is, and that's what these benefits are intended to get at.
We're talking with Congressman Dan Kildee about efforts in the U.S. Congress to extend unemployment insurance. Let's look at the two measures that the Senate is looking at. Your Democratic colleagues are proposing a 6-month extension. retroactive to December 28th, a $6 billion price tag. Where would the money come from to pay for that?
Well, we've offered, and you know, it's a moving target in the Senate right now. So we've offered a number of potential sources for the so-called pay for. That's the term that folks use around here. My preference is that we just saved $11 billion by passing a bipartisan farm bill. It was a bipartisan decision. We ought to assign those savings, which are not anticipated in the Ryan-Murray budget, so it's available for us to redesignate. We ought to assign those savings for this short-term unemployment extension. But there have been other methods. There's something called pension smoothing that allows private employers to use a different calculation for the way they contribute to pensions, and that would put more money into their profits, which increases revenues because it becomes subject to taxation. But here's the problem with the so-called pay-fors. Every time we come up with a way to pay for it, it's not good enough for those who oppose this. So it's a bit disingenuous for members in the Senate and in the House to continue to obsess on how we're going to pay for it, because every time we come up with a way to pay for it, it's not good enough. And under President George W. Bush, who was the last president to sign emergency unemployment extension, there was no pay for, because it's understood that this is sort of the equivalent of a storm, of a natural disaster. 2 million people have temporarily lost their income. We don't sit around and try to figure out whether or not we're going to act when things like this happen, when an emergency occurs. We act and we figure it out within the context of our long-term budget discussions. And that's what I think we really ought to be doing.
Are you hearing Republicans say that money saved in the farm bill should stay out of the budget, or are they receptive to that idea?
Well, some. I mean, I think what we're seeing is among many of the Republicans that I would sort of put in the category of the old school Republicans, the fiscal conservatives but not ideological types, they're willing to compromise on that subject. But there are some, and this has been the frustration for me, that every time we make a deal, like we just did the Ryan budget deal, or not the Ryan budget deal, but the bipartisan budget deal.
Ryan-Murray.
Yeah. Ryan-Murray deal. So now that becomes the starting point for further cuts for many within the Republican conference. Not all, but many. And so the frustration, of course, for me is, when is a deal a deal? That Ryan-Murray budget was a significant compromise. It significantly reduced over what had been previous levels, our discretionary spending levels. But it can't be that every time we compromise, the next deal or the next set of actions has to be further reductions from that compromise. We ought to have a fair argument about how we spend the money that we've agreed to spend, that's for sure. But not every time that we make a deal do we have to come back with every decision that we make and use that as leverage to get further reductions in really essential programs.
Let's talk a bit about the Republican measure here. Republicans are proposing a $5 billion measure, again, retroactive to December 28th, which, as you pointed out, would use what's called pension smoothing to pay for it. But I also noticed that part of the package would also make reforms to the unemployment system, including requiring applicants to show how they plan to return to the workforce. What do you make of those provisions?
Well, I think to me, based on my experience, that's an unnecessary and political poison pill. The people that I know, and this is the thing, I think it's insulting and somewhat condescending for people here in Washington, most of whom in the Senate are millionaires, imposing what they think is in the minds of unemployed this notion that they don't want to work. Everybody I know, and I mean this without exception, everybody I know receiving unemployment compensation would today give up unemployment in order to have a job where they go to work every day, they feel good about the contributions they make to their community, they support their family. There's this bizarre ideology that people who are unemployed or for that matter, people who are poor want to be in that position. And to me, it's kind of a condescending and, as I said, insulting position for millionaire senators in Washington to take about people that they obviously don't understand.
I know veterans are a particular concern for you. It appears they are being hit particularly hard here.
Right. Of the 2 million people who have lost their unemployment extension, 200,000 of them are veterans. So they're disproportionately paying the price for this weak economy. And the reason that that's important, and the reason I have raised that, is that there are many here in Washington who pat themselves on the back or beat their chest and give great speeches about how they will do anything within their power to support our returning veterans, except in this case they won't, or in that case they won't. To me, we owe our veterans more than a good speech. We've got to take this to the floor, and those veterans who are looking for work, they ought to be receiving some kind of support, and that's true for all. But to me, it's particularly ironic and I think somewhat hypocritical for so many around the Capitol to talk good game when it comes to veterans. But when it comes time to actually showing up for the vote, they're nowhere to be found.
Some Republicans do accuse, have repeatedly accused Majority Leader Reid of being more interested in blaming them for being obstructionist than in actually passing a measure. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, all it would have taken is one more Republican to vote in favor of unemployment extension, and we would have been there. So it's pretty disingenuous to blame the person who is for something for the fact that it hasn't happened yet, when it's fully within the hands of Republicans. And you know, I see that in the House too, that people accuse us of all just trying to make political hay. We're willing to give the Republicans credit for bringing it up. We have a discharge petition in the House, which would only take a handful of Republicans. All they have to do is sign their name on the bottom line of a petition to the Speaker, which would force a vote. So we're using every tool we have, not just the politics of this, but every tool we have legislatively to move this forward. But, you know, those who oppose this for a variety of reasons prefer to cast it in political terms. And that's been the thing that's bothering me so much. This is not a political question for the people back home who are losing their house, who are losing their car, who can't find enough food to put on the table, who can't keep the house warm.
What are you hearing with regard to the chances of an actual vote in the Senate on one of these measures this week?
Well, we hope that it'll come this week, but the Senate has its own arcane rules, and again, it's very difficult to predict what they'll do. It will take a couple of Republicans, or at least one, changing their mind on this subject, and so it's hard to predict what'll happen. All I can say is this, that each week that passes, the pressure on Congress will become greater. There are 2 million people who have lost their benefits. But each week that passes, there are another 70,000 Americans that lose emergency unemployment benefits. Those voices are going to get louder and louder. And my view on this is that Congress should act now before this gets to even greater crisis levels.
And Congressman, just to close, if some kind of measure were to pass the Senate, how much are you inclined to think majority Republicans in the House would want to change that?
Would change what came out of the Senate?
Yes.
Well, that would be the difficulty, and it would seem to me that the best solution would be an up or down vote on what the Senate brings up. And if that means that it's passed with almost all the Democrats and a less than a majority of the Republicans, I think that's a better outcome. If we start getting into a ping pong match back and forth with the Senate over specific provisions, you know, this thing could go on for months and months, and I'd hate to see that happen.
We've been talking with Michigan Congressman Dan Kildee, the Democrat from Flint Township. Dan, good talking to you. Good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.